Welcome back to the Rob and the Regulator show on Fifth Risk. I'm here with the Watch Regulator. Alex, how are you?
I'm well, thank you. What?
Am I supposed to say that?
Yeah. What do you mean you're supposed to say that? You're supposed to say, how am I? Yeah.
I thought you were doing the... Oh, okay. Yeah, all good.
Yeah. I thought you were doing... What were you just saying about how you don't get confused?
I wasn't sure whether you wanted a proper intro you're going to record for everything single one or else a little intro and then you say, how are you going?
I said we're going to do it at the end.
Okay.
Like for future ones, not for this one.
Say it
again. I'm glad you gave me shit beforehand for talking down to you, only to be proven right.
Oh, but my goodness.
Everyone, if you haven't already seen it, please go to my the Watch Regulator Instagram page, where I never post anything at all, but go to it now and look at the post of, what's the guy called, Rob?
I don't know what his name is.
Something or something like that.
I've met him, but I totally forgot his name. And then I asked JR, and he told me the guy's name. But anyway,
So go and watch. There was an Omega live stream on Instagram last night, and it was without a doubt the funniest thing I've seen in such a long time. I don't want to ruin it and give too much away, but you need to go and watch it. It is so hilarious. Did you like it? Did you find it? I've watched it honestly 100 times.
Yeah, I've watched it a couple of times. I did find it very, very amusing. Yeah, Petros Protopapas. Protopapas.
He's basically the head of Omega Brand Heritage, I think. So he comes on to do an Instagram live stream, and the people he is supposed to be speaking to haven't turned up, or he can't get connected to them, and it's just him basically having a small nervous breakdown while thousands and thousands of people just look at him having a nervous breakdown. So yeah, go and check that out. It's incredibly hilarious. Just stop listening to the podcast, just go and watch it. Okay, it's going to be much better than any comedy value that we can give you tonight, that's for sure.
Oh dear. Yes. So anyway, apart from that,
yeah,
how are you, Alex?
You're still alive.
You haven't been. Yeah. Okay. Are you in lockdown mode?
I'm going back to work on Monday.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. Monday. Yeah. Well, what's today? It's only Wednesday, right? Okay. By the time it's kicked out, who knows what? Thursday. Okay.
No one in the world will ever know what day it is ever again. I'll go back into work on Monday and I'll be like, "Hi guys, I'm here," and they'll say, "I thought you were supposed to be here on Monday," and I was like, "What? Isn't it Monday?"
Okay. What's next? Wrist check. What are you wearing? What do you got on?
You're in charge, for sure. Apparently, did you listen to the last?
No one's in charge. You?
Did you listen to the last couple of podcasts?
No. Oh yeah.
I've got the same. Is it Buttex? How do you say that brand?
How do you spell it?
Buttex.
Buttex, if it was
Buttex.
Is it Buttex? Yeah, I guess. The thing about French is you have to learn the alphabet first and how they say each letter of the alphabet, and that's pretty much how it is in a word unless there's an accent in it, over it. Okay. Yeah. So it's U when they say the U, so it's Buttex.
Buttex.
So, yeah.
That sounds better than Buttex. So I've got my little Buttex skin diver on with the Salazar stamp. Do you know what a Salazar stamp is?
Yeah, I do know. Yeah. Because I listened to the thing the other day.
Oh, but did you know about it before that?
No. To be honest, no.
It's pretty cool. And you get it on some non-shit watches like this one. You get it on some like vintage Speedmasters and stuff. And you're like, wow, that's got a ding in it. But it's just every watch, didn't matter what it was, day, whatever, had to have that little Salazar stamp. So it's an interesting little side note of watch history. So that's what I'm wearing.
Yeah, good, brilliant. That doesn't make you any more interesting.
No, definitely not.
Good. Okay, fine. Very good. Yeah, I've seen photos of it. It's a cool watch. Do you want to know what I'm wearing? I'm not going
to
tell you.
Yeah, I'm waiting for you to see.
Everybody's waiting. There's thousands of people out there waiting. but I'm not going to tell you anyway. No, it's just a little. It's a Laco, made in Germany.
Yeah. Is it not Laco?
Yes, if you say it in French, it's Laco. Exactly. You're good. You're learning. Laco. But it's not a French name. It's a German name. So I don't know how they say it. They could say it anyway. It's the Valencia 42 mil version, which means it's got a luminous, really luminous dial. The whole dial is like lume. So it's really in the bright sunlight. It'll really, really light up, and you're coming out of the sun, and it's one of those watches that sort of like it glares at you. It's so bright. It's a cool watch, though. It's an old.
Is this one of the brands that you sell? No.
No, I did bring it in. I bought that in for a company I used to work for previously. Had discussions with them, and we finally we got to the point where we imported them for a while for a company I worked with for a couple of years, and then it went by well. They basically stopped importing them basically after I left. But it's a nice little brand. They're good quality. I think they're using mostly actually Miyota movements now, but they were using ETA a lot. This is an ETA. And nothing special, but value, bang for buck, basically. Yeah. So that's what I'm wearing. Is that good? Is that okay?
Yeah.
What do you keep laughing for?
I don't know. You gotta laugh. I'm still just remembering that video of the Omega guy.
We're never gonna get him on here now. You've ruined it for us.
Well, I was speaking to one of our arch nemesis today on Instagram, Andrew from Time Tide. We were talking about that video, but he sent me another video, one of their kind of swanky high-end Time and Tide videos that has production values and stuff, and they've got an Omega event where that Patronus guy is... what's he called? I can't remember.
I thought that was about Harry Potter.
What's he called?
Petros or something. Yeah, Peter probably. Petros, okay. Yeah.
So, anyway. He was doing a presentation at some swanky Melbourne restaurant, and just his depth of knowledge is insane. Really insane. And again, I've been saying to a couple of people, it's nice to see somebody out there in the watch world who is a bit different from everyone else. I guess Swiss watch industry is so often put as being this kind of perfect thing and perfect timepieces. Yeah, and everyone is a bit kind of cookie cutter, is from what I understand in the watch industry. Mm-hmm. So when you get people like him or people like you or people like Peter Borghaus from Aris, people like me. I don't know. I think it just makes things a bit more interesting and human and wonderful. Absolutely. It gives me some faith in the Swiss watch industry, actually. It's not all robotic people. Eccentric characters out there. So I think it's great.
Yes. True. Yeah, true. Okay, that's good.
What are we talking about?
I don't know. What are you drinking? Let's do that. Okay. We've talked about that point in the program.
People must listen to this. The few people that listen to this must think, God, it's been like 15 minutes already. They're now just actually getting to what they're drinking. I'm drinking another bottle of whiskey. I've only got whiskey in the house now. This is what it's come to. I'm trying to have a different whiskey every time I come on. So I've got the Macallan 12-year-old limited edition double cask, which was given to me, another bottle given to me by my good friend JP Melbs from Instagram. I'm very near sick of whiskey now. I'm going to power through, though, especially since ScoMo says the bottle shops are going to be shut down soon. I think I'm going to have to persevere. But if I could have...
Is that what he said?
Yeah, I think they're closing down, yeah. So if I could have no more whiskey for gifts for maybe the next 10 years, that would be much appreciated. So, I'm drinking a fairly decent sized pour of this lovely double cask Macallan from JP.
Very good, very nice. Have you got one of those special little whiskey glasses?
No, it's like for winers.
You guys make in Scotland?
No, we don't. We don't make those glasses. It's the things you sell to tourists.
Exactly. I'm saying that because I have one right in front of me.
Have you got one?
It kind of looks nice.
If you were in a Glasgow pub and you had one of those.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Yeah. You'd be just, you're getting glassed pretty quickly out of my.
I think. I'll get to what I'm drinking, but I think if I remember correctly, it's I've got a couple. I was there with my wife going through that Scotch whiskey museum or whatever in Edinburgh, whatever you call it. And I think that's probably the only other thing. My sole remaining souvenir of Scotland is this little glass. Anyway, it's a bit sad, I know. And it's very touristy. And I knew that when I got it. I took it. And I was like, this is a tourist thing. But anyway.
Does it say something on it?
I don't know. I can't tip it up because I've tipped a whiskey out.
Oh, okay.
I'll let you know later when I finish it. Anyway, and it's got a bit of that Glengoyne. I'm slow with these things. I opened a bottle. It'll last me for, quite a few weeks probably. Because nothing special. Glengoyne.
I'm trying to kill myself off before the coronavirus gets to me.
No, the coronavirus won't be able to get through without you have such, you'd be pickled. So basically, you'll kill it before it even has a.
That's a good idea as well, actually. Yeah, okay.
So anyway, that's drinks. What are we doing today? Did you remind me again?
We've got a really fun thing that Rob came up with when he wasn't drinking.
Oh, that thing.
And it's called Rob's Mystery Drawer Challenge.
Well, there you go. What's in my drawers?
Let's all have a rummage in Rob's drawers.
Well, I think I've mentioned my little chest of drawers from AP, my little chest of watchmaker drawers. It's 80 centimeters. Anyway, it's a chest of drawers, 20 drawers in it, varying sizes from very small to very big. So I'm just going to pull one out and see what's in there, basically. And we'll just
Wait a minute. I thought it's going to be like a game show, and you're going to say, like, all the drawers are numbered, and then I get to pick a number of the drawer. And then that's the drawer you open. And then you close your eyes and rummage your hand around. And then you pull out an item. No?
Stab myself with a pair of number 4 tweezers. Yeah, sounds great. That might be a bit complicated. I don't know what numbers are.
Our listening figures would go through the roof, I'd imagine.
Well, there's no money involved. You're not going to win anything. There's nothing very exciting behind these drawers. It could be drawers. There's drawers full of watches, some of them. But I don't know which ones. Let's pick a drawer. We'll pick this drawer here. There you go. Can you hear it coming out? The whole drawer's out. It's sitting in front of me now. I'm going to put it on the desk. That's a bunch of boring stuff. I couldn't do this.
I'd just open a drawer at work. It'd be like, 5,000 Renata batteries. Oh, well. Here's a 3-2-1 Renata battery. Oh, God damn it. It's a great battery. Here's a 394. God, so many great memories of 394 batteries. So much.
Where are Renata batteries made, you know?
China? I don't know. I just said that. Okay. Switzerland. They're all Swiss made, right?
There is a brand.
Val de Jeu.
Val de Jeu. Yeah. Okay. Jeu is right. Okay, so what am I doing now? I'm looking in my drawer. Oh, I'm just going to stick my hand in and try and
just
shut my eyes. No, it's going to be really hard to actually describe stuff. Watchmakers have such bizarre, eclectic collections of weird leftover stuff in their drawers usually. I do have one little box. I don't know if there's little sliding top boxes with a bunch of spring bars in it, actually. For all different sizes. It's kind of handy stuff. Very interesting. Okay.
This is going well.
And then I have another one underneath that, another little box. And it's just like boxes within boxes within boxes. It's unbelievable. Here's an interesting little thing. Well, I thought it was interesting anyway. There's a bunch of titanium screws from Richard Mills to connect the buckle to the strap. Wow. Very rare they are. And they're worth quite a bit anyway. I don't know where I got them from. Who knows? I have a thread of carbon fiber, a cotton, like a little bit of string made out of carbon fiber with little, that was little tiny bits of thread that they dropped it into a mold to make the first Audemars Piguet forged carbon watches. It's really cool stuff.
Wow. Okay. See, that's pretty cool. Yeah.
Good. It's cool if you see it, but describing it. It's not really cool. Yeah. But there's a story behind it. That's where we can go. See, she can go off. And when I was doing my apprenticeship, when I was doing my training at Audemars Piguet, it just happened that the workshop next door for a little while, there was this workshop where they were just playing with a lot of different prototypes to make these carbon cases for the first. The very first one was the Alinghi Offshore, and that was going to probably be about
How many coughs are you doing, Rob? Are you dead?
I'm here.
Oh my god! Sorry,
I thought I'd repress the coughing. Button. I'm one of those old guys. I thought I'd repress the button. Sorry.
Hear me? Can you hear me now, Rob? Can you hear me?
Nah. Where are you?
You're really trying your best to outdo Patronus guy. Okay. So go on, Rob.
No, I'm not going to say anymore. That's it, really. No, the first carbon watch, you know, the first carbon Alinghi offshore at AP, you probably don't. It was a big deal at the time. They came out with this really cool, I actually have a case here. If we do a YouTube video, I can show you the case and the case back and the bezel and stuff made out of carbon, forged carbon. But yeah, they had these molds of the case of the watch. Like if you can imagine an offshore, just a standard steel offshore, the case of it, how it looks. And they had a mold made up of that, and then they put a specific weight, they'd weigh these little tiny bits of string, which are about 3 centimeters long, just like carbon string, wound around by a material which was actually a resin tiny thread. And they'd drop them into the mold and sort of push them all in there, and then heat it up really, really, really hot. I forget what temperature. 700, 800 degrees or something, and then plus put a massive pressure on this mold and for a certain amount of time, and then let it off and pop it. It would come this little, a carbon, basically offshore watch case, which would all they'd need to do is sort of, clean a few little bits off, and it would be a perfect, smooth, hard carbon case, which was really cool back in the day. That was the very first forged carbon. A lot of brands did it since. Or a few brands anyway, but that was and that was right next to our workshop, and we could go in there and see the guy and see how he's going and bring one out, and he had a little team, and then the team grew, and then it became a massive workshop, and then they outsourced it basically, so someone else used to do it for them because they could do a better job cheaper, I guess, but at the time it was a really, really cool thing, and we were right there we were getting bits and pieces of these test cases and bezels and stuff, and that they were using for the first Alinghi. So it's a piece of history, a piece of watchmaking history, basically.
So you just stole a bit of this stuff when you were...
No, I was gifted.
You were gifted it.
Yeah. I didn't steal anything.
So it was like, when it's at the end of a spool or something, and somebody's like, here, you can have this last little, bit as a memory, mentor of this wonderful thing. That's pretty cool.
And funny you should mention that, because I keep saying funny you should mention it. You must be psychic, because the memory of it with the cases and everything, they were a good memory, because actually the guy, the head of that workshop, he actually died a few years later, quite young.
What? That's not a good memory.
No. But I mean, having the parts, having the pieces, that's not a good that's not funny. I was nearly died. I don't know if it was funny or not, but but having the, having these carbon, every time I get a carbon, these carbon cases out, or carbon bezel, I think that's what I'll... What's his name, dude? And I was obviously knew
very
well.
Close.
Yeah.
So close.
I don't want to say his name. That's all.
Patronus.
So that's a little bit of carbon string. Then I have some little rubber washers from Richard Mille, which I used to put under the screws, and some bits and pieces. I got a whole pile of movement parts out of what looks like a 2120 AP movement, which is a tiny little, quite a small movement. Can't see how it's stuck because I haven't got my loop, and I'm half blind these days. And then a 23-25 movement out of an AP, which is a really small 18 mil and 19 mil movement as well. Do you use, when you're talking about movement dimensions, I imagine you use
lines.
Do you use lines still? Do you, I mean, all the nomenclature, yeah, has lines on it, but I mean,
nobody uses that.
No,
nobody ever even talks about movement sizes like that in our place. It's not, it just doesn't come into it. So ever myself or some other people who are into watches talk about it, it's like people don't even know what the hell you're talking about. So
you really the only place you see it really is on the worksheets for the movements, isn't it? We still see them, I think, on some of the old ETA things and the AP movements as well. What do they call? What do you call that thing? It's a gamme opératoire. It's the operational list when you actually build up a movement or pull it apart. I don't know what you call it in English. No idea. Anyway, in the same case, I don't know why there's some AP white gold AP screws for Royal Oak. I guess where they come from. And then there's a bit of a an old Seiko steel bracelet, and there's a bit of a bracelet from a Tissot T-Touch, which I used to have. Wow. Do you remember that watch? Yeah.
T-Touch is I've been known to work in a T-Touch from time to time.
Really? Yeah. Have you changed the battery?
Yeah.
Is it okay? Is it a simple job?
Yeah.
Because back in the day it wasn't, I don't think, because you had to send it off somewhere and it took, I don't know how long, and it cost quite a bit. I bought one when they very first came out, so the very first titanium version. And then I went to change the battery and I got it done, but I had to send it back. I had to go back to Omega, back to Swatch Group or whatever.
Is that a T-Touch Solar or just a regular one?
Original. The very first T-Touch.
Yeah.
So regular. I think it was Solar. It's kind of cool. It's sort of a cool
gimmicky thing. First smartwatch.
Yeah. Well, that's
what the people, when you speak to people at Tissot.
That's like,
do you know that we actually invented the first smartwatch? Yes. You're like, I'm not sure if you actually did. But so what one is it you've got?
I don't. I sold it because the battery cost too much. And then I sold it to a mate, not a good mate.
Yeah. So it's the guy that died?
No.
He died.
No, but I had it for a couple of years and it was it was kind of funky, but the glass was, the front was always dirty because you kept getting smudgy fingerprints on it. I can't handle that when you're a watch guy. Mm-hmm. You want. So I ended up, selling it to a guy.
I think you do a thing now if you send one in for service and it's a certain, if it's like the first generation, they offer you an upgrade to a modern one. For a big discounted price. I don't know what it is, but I think that's sounds familiar to me. So I always think if I ever find like a early T-Touch and it's broken and I can get it for $5 or something, I would send it in, get a new one, and then never wear the new one anyway. But I've got like a really good deal on it. But
maybe you should be scouring eBay for an old one for parts. You could just trade in. But I do remember that. They actually publicized that, didn't they? I think at one point. I don't know where, whether it was, I was still in Switzerland or here, where they did mention that, there was just, I don't know, there's so many updates and changes and stuff they were. And the old one, I think, was quite complicated for simple stuff, battery changes and stuff. But it was a good story how you got it done, and got it done in Switzerland and for a decent price. I thought that was quite cool as well.
What do you mean? What's the story?
Well, they got to the point where production, where they said, okay, we should be able to get it. We can get it done. Some guys suggested in the company that they should get it done in China or parts of it, certain parts of it. And he said, no, we want to get the whole thing done here. And he basically got them to work at it until they could really get it done in Switzerland. I'm talking about, I'm not talking about every single component, but the main components. To all intents and purposes, the whole watch getting produced in Switzerland for under, I forget what the price was, but it was, the production price was quite cheap and it was almost as cheap as the Chinese could do it, which sounds...
Wow.
Sounds
unbelievable to me.
I was
about to say, is that why it's still exactly the same technology that I had at the beginning, because it's still been made in Switzerland.
Maybe, yes. But yes.
I actually saw something recently on LinkedIn, and it was an update to T-Touch where it's going to have Android or Bluetooth, or it's going to be really, well, I'm not sure how smart it's going to be yet. Maybe up there with kind of a current intelligence of a current world leader or something, that level of smartness. But when I saw it, I can't remember what exactly the technology update was, mm-hmm. but I thought, okay, that's pretty cool that they're going there. So
it is. God. And the thing is, and the reason why it was such a big deal that he got it done, it managed to get it produced at such a good price, it was value for money or whatever, it was that, in fact, it turned out to be a massive money spinner for the company and the group. You know, as you know, the T-Touch who become such an iconic, they would call an iconic watch. From at the start, it was, they really didn't have that confidence, or they weren't really sure. He was sure. Per Hayek, they called him, the father Hayek, when they first did it. But the guys that worked there even weren't that sure. They weren't convinced. But it really turned out, you know, they sold millions and millions of units. So, you know, all's well that ends well, basically.
When we started working on them, or when I'd started getting trained up on them, my boss had one, and he gave it to me to learn to, like, wear it. And the functions are, I'm not going to say they're complicated, but it's a totally different thing from working on that versus working on a mechanical watch, or even just a regular quartz watch. So he would give you this T-Touch to wear. Right. And then when you'd kind of trained yourself up on how to use all the functions, then you'd give it to someone else who was going to work on T-Touches.
Right.
Okay. But then it kind of turned into like a punishment thing where, you're the new person and you'd started, that was kind of it's like if you went to boarding school and people spanked you or something, that's kind of the watch workshop equivalent of that. You had to wear the T-Touch for a month until you tell someone else, some other poor bugger came along, and then they were the new person to be T-touched. Yeah, that was it.
Oh dear. Right, okay.
Okay, no more T-Touch chat. We've had about 20 minutes of T-Touch chat.
First and last time. Okay, what else have I got in here? I've got an old toothbrush. That's probably just for cleaning watches and stuff. How do you clean your watches? How do you advise people to clean their watches? Toothbrush? Old toothbrush, soap and warm water, whatever.
Putting stuff in, getting those ultrasonics online and putting the full watch and stuff in, which is... Well, what are your thoughts of putting a full watch... There's even, I saw somebody had, I can't remember what watch it was, but it was on in this little ultrasonic thing, and in the ultrasonic, it came with a little cradle thing or something, so the watch head was out of the water, but the bracelet was in. No. And then, what do you think about that?
I don't want to give away any silly things I've done, but no, I wouldn't. I mean, ultrasonics are great.
I think about the vibrations going through the bracelet, traveling up into the case, the case vibrating, the screws coming loose inside the movement. I don't recommend it really,
but I had colleagues who did it, and they just, when you had a filthy bracelet and they want to take a link out, for example, or whatever, and you can just holding it by the hand, holding the head out, and that's the same thing. You know, you're getting vibrations through the head. You shouldn't do it. No, definitely not. Take the bracelet off, put it in the basket, put it underwater, put everything in there. But the head, you need to clean it with a little toothbrush.
Yeah.
Basically.
It's that high tech.
it's very, very high tech, isn't it? Basically. What else have I got in here? I got a little thing for sharpening screwdrivers. I wonder if you have one of these, or for shaping your screwdrivers. If you go to the Bergeron website and you put 2461, the Bergeron 2461 tool, have you ever seen one? It's like a little wheel each side. Have you ever seen one of those?
Oh, yep. We've got, not to give away too many trade secrets, we've got one of those.
Right, okay.
In the workshop.
Yeah, I can imagine. Well, it's not, Yeah.
But you're supposed to, that's the kind of thing we're supposed to use, is,
yeah,
is that. But I don't know, so few people actually do anything with their screwdrivers now. It is deeply, deeply embarrassing. Sometimes you look at somebody's screwdrivers, it looks like, somebody's been gnawing on the actual...
The thing is, I mean, you look at them just, you know, with the naked eye and they look okay, you know, you can see, but you look at them with a loop, and they're really, really bad. I can't, and again, that's one of the first things you learn being an apprentice watchmaker in Switzerland is, how to shape your screwdrivers. And I've been through that before about, having different screwdrivers, different calibers and a whole different bunch of things. But you spend days and days and days and days just learning how to shape a screwdriver properly. And this little tool, it's not too bad. It's not perfect either, but for some things, obviously you need the right size stone for it as well, a large enough stone, which is fine, an emery stone, which I have as well in another drawer probably. But it's not a bad little tool.
I don't mind it. I've used it a couple of times, but just to go and get it, or even if you have
so
one.
So hard.
I know, first world problems, but to get it out or whatever, whereas... if you've just got a little stone or something on your bench and you're touching up your screwdrivers as you go, which you need to do. This is,
of course.
I get so pissed off when I see people doing the kind of whole, it's like 20 minutes before they're due to leave for the day. Mm-hmm. I'm going to sharpen my screwdrivers. And I'm thinking, like, what the hell condition have your screwdrivers been in for the rest of the day? You know, you're suddenly only looking after them by the end of the day. It's just, it doesn't work like that. It does not work like that.
No, but I guess, I mean, I've seen guys in Switzerland doing that as well on a workbench where they're killing time at the end of the day. And it's, I guess you say at least the next day they're starting it with fresh screwdrivers and they're all, nice and pointy and nice, nicely shaped.
If you're touching them up over the course of the day and then also you're doing like a good proper job at the end of the day, that's fine. Yeah. But if you're just doing them at the end of the day and you never do anything else the rest of the time, then it's just bullshit.
Agreed.
Good.
And what do you? What are they? What's the story with screws? If you mark a screw, when you're doing a service, for example, where you are, would you be swapping the screw out immediately, or what's the story? Is there do you polish screws at all?
I have been known to polish a screw from time to time, but it's not recommended. I'm known to do lots of things that aren't recommended. Okay.
Right.
Keep the dream of watchmaking alive. It's sometimes when you're changing parts on things as well, sometimes you don't want to have to wait for a new part, even if you get it hour later. You just want to get that job done. You want to get the watch closed up. Yes. Whatever it is you're doing, you want to get on with it and move on to the next next job. You don't want to get a part 2 days later, and then you're trying to work out like what you were doing in the first place. Mm. And it hones your skills more if you're making things and fixing things rather than just changing parts out. If you just change parts out all the time, then that's all you can ever do because you're not building any skill set.
Yep.
So depending on how much...
Skills of the watch regulator. Yes, yeah, I agree.
That's the terrifying thing, the skills of the watch regulator. Think back to the Renata battery conversation from earlier on.
What about, do you have very, very small screws or tiny screws where you'd need to make your own screwdriver bit out of copper or bronze or something, brass?
Not anything I work on. It's kind of interesting, actually, from the level of watchmaking that you're at to the subterranean level.
That I was at.
That I'm at. It's still nice though that there's certain things that we can agree on.
And the principle's there. I mean, it's not rocket science. I mean, it's logical really. If you have to keep things not marked. That's why we always we're always manipulating screws with bronze, brass. Right. Sorry, tweezers only. And we'd never touch a pair of steel tweezers unless it was to do the hairspring or fours or fives or whatever, specialist tweezers. Your general everyday tweezers, it was always was brass. It was just no brainer. There's nothing else. No option, basically. Obviously, if you're dealing with blued screws, then it's even worse. Or you know, you have to be more careful. But yeah, we're often making little screwdriver bits out of copper, something really soft, so that we would to make sure we didn't mark a certain screw in a certain movement, because they were renowned for being very delicate. Yeah, and the whole screwing thing as well, with all different dimensions and diameters of screws. It's something that we had to sort of learn quite thoroughly, like the correct torque for different screws, to not damage a screw or a bridge or whatever. So that was, it's another few weeks worth of training just to learn how to screw a screw in, basically, at the right torque, so it wasn't too loose, too tight. Then you had screws with very flat heads and very short or shallow shafts or short shafts, where if you screwed too tight, you could actually see the mark on the top of the in the bottom of the groove of the screw. You could see a little round thing where it was starting to break, or underneath, like there was a stress fracture in the end. Then you'd have to pull the whole thing out and start again. Yeah.
Do you have any torque screwdrivers?
They do in production. When they're actually making the parts, but we had to learn how to use them in case we ended up in production, basically. But then Bergeron came out with these little torque screwdrivers, where you have like a little torque collar that goes over a standard screwdriver, which is a really clever idea. Mm. And you can set those to certain torques. But AP had their own sets of torque screwdrivers, which were used for most specialist sort of jobs. But yeah, the new Bergeron screwdrivers is a really, really clever thing. It's it's just a collar with some sort of little ratchet system. And it's not that big, and it slides over top of a screwdriver. I forget what they're called in English. I don't know what they're called in French either.
What language do you know what they're called in?
Swahili. There's no point saying that, really. So it was something to take into account, and it was a very fine tuning thing for your fingers to learn how to be to be confident in. And that was part of exams, that you build a movement up, hand it in, and then they pull it all apart, checking the torques just with their fingers, so it's not as if it was amazing. With the experience over years and years, how they can just get the perfect torque for a screw. And that goes for every screw holding down a bridge, which is, basicest example, to whatever, something holding down a spring or a click gear or whatever.
Okay, here's a question for you.
Here we go. Yeah.
You break a screw.
Mm. Never happened.
You've never done that.
Yeah.
You lying bastard.
Well, to break a screw, you got to be pretty heavy handed. I mean, you could damage a screw, mark a screw, we called it, which was pretty common. Yeah. Okay.
You never broken a screw? Okay. You're a better man. Broken.
No, I have broken. Yeah. The shallow ones I was talking about very occasionally, the first couple probably, but not since. But I mean, a standard screw, a bridge screw, you should never break one, basically.
Like a case back screw?
No.
God, see, this is what happens when you spend thousands of dollars on a proper watchmaking education.
Well, there's that. But, I mean, it's sometimes it's a screw. If you've got a cheap screw, a cheaply made screw, and you've got a cheaply made screwdriver and a cheaply made case back, and you know, it's much easier to do as well, much easier to break.
True.
That's my theory. Learn that after the basics. After if you're not a total, if you've got a tiny bit of feeling in your fingers and you're not a total meathead, like a knuckle dragger, you learn pretty quickly. Decent torque for a screw.
I haven't broken any screws in a couple of weeks, but I have been off. That's very good. I'm getting back to work on Monday, so I've got. Looking forward to wrecking some screws. But, actually, in my drawer, my top right drawer, I have a box, and it always brings me great joy. And it has screws in it, and on the box, and this is written by someone else, not by me. I've inherited this box, which happens a lot.
Yes,
it says on it, "Dirty old screws." And it just always brings a smile to my face whenever I see it. And that's where you put all your dirty old screws.
Yeah, okay. Well, they do get dirty, don't they? Basically, but they yeah, when they're broken, they're broken. They're no good. But marked or having, they call it corn as well. Like you put corne, that's like horned. So you, when you're doing it, you know, you can imagine if you're doing a polished screw too tight, especially if you've got a black polished screw, you're screwed. You're always going to use a copper screwdriver bit or wood, you know, to not mark it at all, to a point as much as you can to manipulate them. But it's black polished or blued or even a polished screw, if it's really easy to do it a little bit tiny bit too tight. And even if it's sometimes it's almost the point where the line between having it to the correct torque and doing it that tiny bit more to the point where, you know, each side of the slot is a bit marked, it's no good. If you have an AP with a sapphire back, a display or any decent big brand, you know, even Omegas, you should take that screw out, polish it again and put it back in again and make sure you put it back in so it's not. Basically, the customer should be able to look at it with a loop. Not that they do, hopefully, but a watchmaker. The next watchmaker that gets it should be able to look at it with a loop and not tell that it's, I mean, he knows it's come in and out that screw, but not being able to tell that it's you know, been manipulated. So it's got to look brand new.
I think there's kind of guidelines as to what you can see on it and what's acceptable and what's not for QC purposes. Yeah,
exactly. The more expensive a brand is, or the more expensive or the more sort of audiology high end a brand is, then the tighter the guidelines are, and the less they'll let things through.
Correct.
Yeah. So interesting.
What else you got, Rob? What else is there?
What else I got now? I've got a couple little pieces of wood. I think it's called rosewood. It's hard rosewood. It's like a little again, without showing you, it's kind of hard to describe. It's the wood which you use as a support when you're doing anglage, the old my chamfer.
If you haven't checked out Rob's 2-hour long anglage masterclass podcast,
exactly. These are the bits. There's two here. One's kind of pretty new. I haven't used much, and one that I've used for all of my exam pieces and everything that I ever did as far as chamfering goes. They're basically like you imagine a 45 degree piece of wood that fits in your little vise, the vise that goes on the front of your watchmaking bench.
Yeah.
And then sort of, so it sticks out a bit and it gives you something to hold your, what you're working on. If you have a bridge with a couple of screw holes in it, small bridge, one of those screw holes you'll actually use to screw it onto a handle, basically, so you can hang onto that bridge with your handle. There's probably pictures online. And then you rest that on this little piece of wood I have in my hand here, and you, with your files, with your all your little files, you go to town, basically. So, and that's rosewood. It's very hard with it's bizarre. All these things, all the watchmakers use them in Switzerland. They always have, and that's how it is. And you go in the Bergeron catalogue, you buy that bit of, you know, buy that thing. Everyone knows what it's for. It's sort of like the roseau, the little pieces of really, really soft wood that you use for polishing things and cleaning parts. You don't use them here because you can't buy them, but you buy these bundles of I think they call it, what do they call it? Anyway, it's basically this weed that grows up in the Jura Mountains. It's like a thistle, and they go through in summer, and when they're all dead, and they chop them off, and they chop them up in little pieces, and they take all the outside skin off, and you're left with this pithy little soft bit inside, almost like balsa wood.
We've got those. When you said you couldn't get them, I was like, shit, I must be thinking of something different. Porous looking.
Very porous stuff. I do have a few bundles of them here, but they're kind of getting rarer, and that's good if you've got them, because they're kind of outside of Switzerland. You can buy them on Bergeron. You know, they cost silly money probably for a bit of, but there's some little dude, you know, going around collecting these things up, cutting them off and doing his little workshop where he's, you know, preparing them for watchmakers. And then, with the high-end stuff and even, polishing and that, you use them quite a bit, those things. And then obviously they're consumables. They wear out in 2 minutes. And you chop the end off and use it a bit more, and then chop the end off until there's nothing left. Then you throw it in the bin and start again. But they're all kind of so. And the different pieces of wood you use for the diamond paste and all this kind of stuff. It's it's very specific. They have their things, the traditional things that they've been using forever.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Isn't that great that they've been using this thistle thing for God knows how many years, and it's still something used now? That's the really exciting part of watchmaking for me. It's like there's no other thing they've come up with yet. They're like,
no.
Better get up the hills, cut down some of those old dead thistles. We need some more watchmaking tools.
That's exactly what it's like. And every time you go up the hills,
coaxials and stuff. And
exactly. No. I mean, every time I use those things, I think, you know, where they come from, up in the hills, and you can see. I can see. I've seen them growing green at the start of the, you know, in the spring. It's a really weird concept of having these such old tools, you know, provided by nature, basically. Like these different woods and stuff. So it's, yeah, that's sort of a bit of, went off on a bit of a tangent there, so that's good.
Can I ask a question, Rob?
You can ask, yeah.
What's going to happen when you die to all these things?
Well,
asking the question seems like an opportune moment.
I don't know. They might not, oh, you mean all my stuff, my drawers?
Yeah.
I'll probably, I don't know, I'll get my kids to auction it off to the
highest bidder. You want to like give your ungrateful kids all your good stuff? They're not going to understand the thistle wood.
Yeah, they were born in Switzerland. You know, they got a bit of that old worldness about them. But look, you play your cards right, and you just never know. You know, you just never know.
I can't wait to go along for the will reading, and they're like, "Here's your thistle wood." God, look, he's so emotional. He's crying.
I might leave my little Bergeron screwdriver shaper, grinder.
You do need another one in the workshop. So
no, it's not for the workshop. It's for you, my friend.
Yeah, I'll take it in. I take, like, sometimes if you work in a workshop, you need to take in your own stuff because they don't always have all the stuff that you need and the stuff that you're used to working with. So sometimes you just need to, like, they had loom at one point. And there's no loom anymore. They lost the loom or something.
Powder or something.
I had loom from before I got into watchmaking, where I would like re-loom my own hands and stuff. So I just turned up one day with loom.
Brilliant.
And then somebody's like, "Oh, where did you get that loom from?" And it's like, "The internet." And they're like, no, but what? Where was that in the workshop? We've been looking for that for years." And I was saying, no, this is like my own loom. And they looked at me like, "Wait a minute, you've been here 3 days. Why have you got your own loom?" But now I'm the loom guy. People come to me and are like,
"Brilliant!
Can you re-loom this bezel pip on like an old Seamaster or something?" And I'm like,
"Literally brilliant!
Hell yes, I can, and I take great pride in it." But yeah, sometimes you need to bring in your own tools.
Oh, absolutely, yes. And that's what was good about the course when I started training there. You know, you pay out, the tech aid, you pay all these tools. I mean, the same as an apprentice here, I guess, if you're a tradesman or whatever. When I used to work in airplanes, I did the same thing for my toolbox back in the day. But they take it out. So you have this brilliant, it's basically an awesome toolkit, and you've got a massive head start on just, especially if you're with a maison like Audemars Piguet, because you've got a lot of guys who have done things the old way. So they know what you need to do what you're going to do in your career, basically. So it's nice to have. It's a nice thing. Should we move along, or are you out of time?
Sure. No. What time is it? I don't even know.
I don't know. What have I got here? Oh, I've got a.
God, we're 48 minutes in. Jesus Christ. No, keep on going. I'm enjoying this.
Are you good? This next thing's got nothing to do with watchmaking. It's a badge from my old school. Badge off my blazer from my school, by the looks. Yeah, well, high school. Okay. Don't know what they're doing there.
What was the school, Rob? Can't bring something out your drawer and not like speak as a badge. Not going. You need to paint the picture in people's minds. You need to be like, there's an emblem on there. It's of an ostrich, like fucking a giraffe or something. You need to get people's minds to imagine that.
No ostrich, no giraffe. Sorry.
Well, what's on it?
Book. It's got a book, and it's probably got something written in Latin. I can't see that. It's got West Wyalong High School. So West Wyalong is a town in the center of New South Wales, pretty much.
Is that out in the old wheat belt?
Yes, exactly. Yeah, in the sticks, in the bush. I don't know whether I was prefect or something or other.
Were you a prefect? Jesus Christ. We have to wrap this thing.
Anyway, next, moving right along. You know those little, do you have those little cases, little I don't know what you even call them, receptacles, little things that you, they're about a centimetre and a half, because little round things with a lid, you know, you put little parts in, basically.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Got, oh, you've got round ones.
5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 of those sitting in here. Some of them are empty and some of them have, who knows.
You know, lots of the little square ones, like little jewellery boxes are like yes. white with a clear lid. But yep. then we get yep. sometimes the good ones, I think, are Breggy, and they're round, and they yeah. have, like, it's almost like glad wrap or cling film or something.
Yeah. So when you okay. put,
and that yes. has, like, one part in it, mm-hmm. and yep. it looks like the part is just suspended in midair in the box. Yep. It's, like, so baller when you look at it. Those are the really good ones to get. But what ones are you talking about?
Yeah, I've got a few of those here as well, but these ones are just the little ones where they've got aluminium. They've got a tiny little aluminium can with a little clear lid on top, plastic lid, or aluminium and plastic. They're quite complicated, actually, like for a little tiny receptacle for parts, screws and stuff. Most of them are those. Some of them are all, the two halves are both clear plastic, hard plastic, and they have little washers from various movements, Richard Mill, AEP, my own movements, whatever. I've got this little long, skinny one here with what looks like a... what do you call those things? My goodness. It's like when you want to make a hole a bit bigger and you, there's a carissoir, you call them in French, with like a little point which has got three or four sides and they're like sharp, and you just give a little tiny adjustment with your hand in a hole to make it a tiny bit bigger. You not have those? You use a, after that, you use a no-go gauge to tell exactly what size the hole is when you've been playing with.
Oh, this is above my pay grade.
Yeah, okay. I actually have another drawer we get to later on. I have a wooden box, which is about 100 years old at least, and maybe, I don't know, 6 inches by three. And it's only about half an inch or a centimeter tall and high, the whole box, and it slides this lid off. And there's all these little compartments. It's ancient. With all these little accessoires I'm talking about here, there's all different sizes of them. There's hundreds of them in there. And also little tiny taps and dies, you know, for making threads or threading holes.
Mm-hmm.
Tiny 0.2, 0.25 thread sizes. Yeah, it's nuts. I don't know where I got that from. Some old dude's box, watchmaker.
So you've inherited stuff as well.
I have inherited stuff. Yeah,
it's kind of a special thing when you inherit.
Yeah, something
like that.
It is, and it really. I guess that means I really have to hand some of it on, don't I?
You do. only the good stuff. I've actually got another thing that always makes me laugh. I've got this a case back knife. It's like it's a pretty old one.
Yeah.
And it has the name of a watchmaker engraved on it.
Right.
And I remember that watchmaker. And then I also remember he left the company under a cloud, shall we say, after something when she'd had a few too many drinks. Right. A Christmas party. So I always look at it and I look at his name and I'm like, oh, I wonder what he's doing now. But it is, other than that, it's nice when somebody, when you go, especially if you're learning something,
yes,
or you go to a more qualified watchmaker,
mm-hmm.
and you say, I'm struggling with this, and then they show you how to do something, and you're like, oh, if only I had one of those, that thing you've got. Would be excellent. I wouldn't have fucking wrecked this thing if I had one of those little things, that thing. And then they go, here, you have that one. And then you're like, wow. It makes you feel special. And they have like an R10 in their drawer because they're stockpiling them all like paper during the coronavirus thing. But you feel special. And then you go away and you're like, I've got this new tool and I know how to use it.
Yeah. You do feel special. You take it back to your desk with two hands, carefully put it down. But you're not special. You just feel special. That's all.
Mm.
But it's nice to, it's nice. There's plenty of things in this kit where, you know, old guys have given to me, or guys have showed me how to shape a tool or make a tool and stuff. And it sort of brings back memories, basically. So almost, well, what else? Not much else in here. I've got a, what does that say? It's a, I've got a Speedy Hessalite glass, lightly scratched.
Best way,
so that's just sitting in. It's all wrapped up again. I've got all the stuff, it's all wrapped up, and the stuff in little Ziploc bags, little seals from different watches. There's a crown of something else, I don't know if that's an Omega or something. That's some AP stuff, This is sort of the basic draw. It's up the top, so we'll get to the complicated.
How many drawers have you got?
There's 20 in this thing.
Oh, this is so exciting. Okay, this is I'm making a ruling. This is now a new series, okay? What's in Rob's drawers? Or
we might have gone through. This might be the most interesting one, though. Some of them are pretty boring.
Yeah, but I think this is a good thing. I think this is something we can do. So is that as wrapped that one drawer? There's nothing else.
No, oh no, not really. I've got all these little cans I was talking about. Little things. They've all got stuff in them, and I haven't even looked at them with a loop to see what they are. Some of the washers, some are screws, some are buckle attachment. There's one here basically has the Amiga sign on the front, so it's something out of an Amiga. I can't put my loop on because I've got my headphones on, but I'm going to have a look at that. What's in there? Oh, there's some nice bracelet screws. Okay, out of an Amiga. They could be used or new. I don't know. Then we've got, what's that, something under 20 mil. I don't know what that is. There's some washers here that's definitely Richard Mille stuff. The whole pile of Richard Mille screws and washers. These screws that cost $1 million a kilo. So they say. Some AP screws, some gold AP screws, front and back for a Royal Oak by the looks. Full set. I wonder where that come from.
You're going to have to melt all this down pretty soon.
Yeah, maybe.
Realize that. Gold prices are through the roof.
Yeah. Then I've got there's some just loose screwdrivers right in the front of that drawer because it is one of the top left ones, and I sort of grab screwdrivers out of there. It's not the screwdriver you use for proper watchmaking, but if I want to do anything or fix a pair of glasses or something, that's where they'll come out of there from. There is a little thing here. I don't know what it is. I don't know what it's called even. It's for checking when you do a hairspring, when you cut a hairspring and you attach the hairspring to a balance wheel. It's for checking the length of a hairspring, like the raw hairspring before you put any bends in it, the hairspring mm-hmm. you get from General Risto or whatever they're called. And there's a little piece of glass, and they've always – it's a crazy little tool. It's a plate of glass, and it's a little steel rim around the bottom, and then it has – underneath has a little piece of paper with all these different segments on it at every 30 degrees basically. And, it's – all divided up so you can put your hairspring on there. We'll look at it with a loop, and then you know exactly how long, going by the books and for that particular hairspring or whichever watch you're working on or whichever frequency you want, you cut the hairspring to the right length, basically using those little sectors. I don't know why it's on glass. I'm sure if I started doing it again, I'd be able to tell you straight away. There's a hole in the middle for dropping your balance wheel on with your staff, the axis of your balance wheel. Yeah, it's kind of weird. I wouldn't even know what that tool's called anymore.
Okay, put my name down for that as well because I don't have one of those. Okay.
Yeah.
It's great. It's like a little shopping spree I'm going on just now.
A virtual shopping spree. Yeah. I've got some old used seals out of some whatever watches I've pulled backs off probably. And that basically wraps up this drawer. There is one another little box with another whole bunch of components out of another AP, that's the same with 2120 movement. There's wheels, there's first and second wheels. There's a couple of crowns, so from Royal Oaks. There's some springs. There's a whole reverser system there, two of them by the looks. Looking at my loop now, you can imagine me bending over this little tiny box with my loop. Some more little tiny screws. Screws about 0.6 mil across by the looks of that one. Yeah, so it's a little bits and bobs, as the watchmakers say. Collect it up. You know what watchmakers are like. They don't throw out much stuff. They're very reluctant to throw anything out, actually. Or the ones I know anyway.
Yeah, I think maybe that's changed. I certainly don't throw anything out. I've got a box that says junk on it. Yeah. And there's stuff in there like broken ceramic links. It's just, I'm not even joking.
You're never, ever going to use
it. Not even joking. But I think... I don't even know. It's like it would have to be some new situation would come up that would call for a broken. And I can't imagine what that situation might be as yet.
Yeah, right, okay.
Watchmakers are normally hoarders by nature. Yes. Actually, I remember the guy who I got the case back knife from, I remember after he was asked to leave the premises and they went through his bench. And or some other manager who wasn't in the workshop went through his bench and was just like flabbergasted by the stockpiles of stuff.
But good stuff or junk? In there.
No, it was like stuff they're like, we've been trying to get these from Switzerland and they're like, we can't get them. And he just had, but he'd been in the game for maybe 35 something years.
Oh, okay.
And he had so much stuff.
Yep.
And then after that, I think there was kind of like an amnesty for like, if you're stockpiling 35 years worth of parts in your bench, now is the time to like hand them in.
Okay.
But it's, I don't know, you want the part, some things you want to give, you don't want to have a huge stockpile of because you just don't use them and you know that.
Yeah, of course.
And other things, like it's not like you're taking them home and selling them or anything.
No, you're not gaining anything from it.
A lot of the time, if you try and give them back to whoever, they're like, it's a lot of work for us to have to put these back into the system or something.
Yep.
So you're better off just keeping them yourself and using them as long as it's going to be something you know you're going to be working on again.
Yes.
It's better just to keep the part and then you don't have to go through the whole process of ordering the part again. So,
is there some sort of setup where a quote is done or a repair is prepared first where someone else gets out all the parts that you're going to need? Or is that not how it works in your workshop?
What do you mean? Say that again.
I mean, basically, at AP, for example, you had to work where the watch would come in, it'd be pulled apart, the person would do a quote, the quote would be done. And then if it was okayed, then that one person would go in there and get all the different parts that were needed for that repair. And that would go out to the watchmaker.
So it's like diagnostics. So it's like what
But then the watchmaker.
Yeah,
the watchmaker wouldn't have to go and get any parts. Basically, you could use whatever's, it all comes with the watch to repair.
Well, there's still going to be certain things, but if it's like a full service with like gaskets and all that kind of stuff, crown, then that all comes with it. But there still might be, if it's a proper movement service, there might be little bits of the movement that obviously need swapped out or changed. That's kind of what you start off with, is you do diagnostics and then you're diagnosing what's wrong with the watch and trying to, and you kind of get up to speed pretty quickly, because if you don't order the right parts and then you get some miserable watchmaker coming bollocking you.
Oh, for sure.
And then it's something that watch then has to go on back order, because if you'd actually ordered the correct part in the first place, then they could have done the job there and then, but because you didn't spot something, they have to order the part and then it's going to be on their shelf for 4 weeks while there's parts in Switzerland, blah, blah, blah. So you quickly learn to be more vigilant, because I do all warranty stuff. It's kind of totally different. It's just like whatever it takes to fix the job there and then,
get
it done as quickly as possible. We need that watch back in the customer's wrist. Like 1000% all about the best customer experience. It's a kind of totally different thing, but it's a lot. Yeah. It's better because you can do more stuff. It's more exciting.
Okay. Yeah,
It's a lot more problem solving. There's no kind of taking the easy way out.
No,
it's all about making sure the watch gets back to the customer as quickly as possible. So
Okay. And do you save all the parts for a certain amount of time once you've done the service? Just in case they complain or they want something, they ask for it back, or they ask you to prove that something was changed out or something.
They get all the parts back anyway. The customers get all the parts back, unless it's a warranty job.
Yes.
If it's an actual service, which I don't think Rolex do this, because they don't want people selling old crowns.
No, exactly.
Like that.
Yeah, yeah. But
when we give stuff back, it's got all the gaskets. It's got absolutely everything.
That's true. You mentioned
absolutely everything, which I think is good. But I know with Rolex, I think they take your stuff out the back and like.
Oh no, they would
into a bin or something.
No, what AP, we did the same thing. We wouldn't give the parts back to AP necessarily. You give them a few little parts if it was a small service or whatever, but the parts where you know that there's a market for, basically, if they could sell, you'd basically, but even every single service you'd have, you put in a Ziploc bag, you have the date on it and the service job, and that'd be in your drawer, the bottom drawer of your desk.
Okay.
Your desk for 2 years, basically. So if the customer ever came back or there was something come up, you could flick through there. There it is. That's all the stuff. That's what we did.
After 2 years, what happens?
Well, most watchmakers put it in their little hoard.
This is how your drawers are so full of stuff, right?
Oh, well, that's exactly. I've got some Ziploc bags that have come out of that filing system. Yeah, when I was at AP, but not many. That was, you know, there's a few bits and pieces, but yeah. Some guys keep them. Some guys toss them.
You've got like gold crowns and stuff like that. You just that's yours after 2 years.
No, the gold crowns would be taken off the price of a quote. So that because it'd be the value of the gold, which is very, very
little. Okay.
So that would go back to the foundry or whatever. That'd go back to the factory and get sent back to the supplier doing the gold. Really. So that you wouldn't really keep much of that. If you tried to do it, you wouldn't get away with it for very long.
Well, that's the good thing about, like, I've got enough junk in my drawers. I don't need to be keeping everyone's
old
gaskets and stuff like that. Where am I going to store all my Renata batteries if I have drawers full of actual watch parts? I think it's kind of good to go back to the customer and then they can see
definitely
where their money's gone, and they can look at the old, mm-hmm. like, worn out crystal gasket, because a lot of time you can't see how old and scabby they are until it's out, and they can say, yep. Oh, actually, you know what, they were right, it did need a full service, it did need all this more often changed. I should do it exactly.
True.
I think it's a good thing.
Yep there's yep, for most brands it's a good thing, I think, to send it all back, basically. Yeah, you're talking high-end brands, people do go nuts just for little tiny parts or whatever. I'm not talking Richard Mille. We couldn't really, you could give stuff back because you knew the customer wasn't out to sell it anyway, but there was such a massive market out there though for little parts that it was nuts. So yeah, different. It's funny, it's interesting though to see how different brands do things differently, different ways of doing things.
I think our way is definitely the best. Just
your way, you're always the best.
Yeah. Well, not my way personally, but yeah, my way personally would be even better.
Well, that's pretty much that draw. I'm afraid there's some little stuff that I can't look at because I haven't got my look, but it's just part of, you know, watches or cases, basically, worked on over the years. It's nothing really exciting, but I do have this box full of all different sizes of spring bars, which is
We're going to do a whole episode, spin-off episode, just spring bars.
Yeah, we probably need to. That's nuts.
If we can make that entertaining for people, then
we're right. Yeah.
Yeah, we're going to be fine. Can I tell one quick story about those little boxes you're talking about?
I think I can tell a joke.
I remember when I started in the industry and I went to my first watchmaker party kind of thing, out drinking, went to somebody's house, and there were watches flying about and people were bringing out watches and people were just like cracking open watch bags in somebody's kitchen. And I was like, oh my God, I was like so into it. I was like, this is everything that I dreamed it was going to be. We've all had too much to drink. People are opening like watch bags with butter knives and stuff. I was like, this is just excellent. Brilliant. And then the guy whose house we were at brought this little box. And it was like one of the boxes that we get at work, like these little boxes that you're talking about. And it says on the box, Swiss made. I'm like, oh, God, this is so exciting. And people are like still looking at movements and stuff like that and talking about vintage watches. And then I'm like, what's going to be in this case? He opens the case and that's where he kept all these drugs.
Yep. That's so, I'm sure there's a few watchmakers that multi have multi uses for these little boxes. Why not? I suppose. Yeah.
So yeah, that was quite an eventful night, but it kind of went from going to God, I'm in an exciting industry and this is what it's all about, and having kind of drinks and nothing's like not kind of super wild to actually just watchmakers are just like everyone else, right?
Even the Swiss ones, we had some good little sessions. It's funny, they're very conservative and they're very fastidious and fussy with their jobs, but they play pretty hard as well. The Europeans, they're brilliant.
I hear some of them drink beer and grenadine. Like, I don't know anything, if I've ever heard of anything more hardcore.
That's pretty hardcore, actually. If you haven't tried it, don't do it. It's messy.
I feel like that should almost be like this ceremonial drink of the podcast or something. Like, next time we do like another live one,
we can arrange that.
Yeah. We'll need to do just like some kind of cheap Aldi beer and grenadine drinking competition or something.
Yeah, I can get on board. Yeah. Don't knock it till you try it.
I'm going to try it. I'm going to be all over it. Right. We're going to wrap it for the night.
Let's wrap it up.
Yeah. What have you got for Instagram follow, Rob?
Instagram followers, have we mentioned?
You're supposed to be all. Rob's got this little short list. Every time, 2 minutes before we come on, I'm like furiously. It wasn't actually that difficult this time, but normally I'm furiously thinking back to who I've spoken to recently and who I've had some kind of connection with. Rob's got like a little list. He just scores people off. So I don't know how you can not know.
It's in my head. No, not really.
It's not an app. Okay.
No, I do have it on a piece of paper, but the problem is the next one on the list was Spanish Rob, and everyone knows about him already because he's been on. I've been following him for, I've known Spanish Rob for a little while. Good, great guy. What about Fratello Watches? Have we done that? Have we mentioned him?
All these industry people. What's his face? What's he called?
Yeah, it is.
Is that not the guy that...
Yeah, the Omega guy, Speedy Tuesday guy.
That's the Omega guy who was trying to get on Facebook, Instagram Live last night. What was he called again?
No, not him. No.
Robert Young. Please. Please, Robert. Robert, please. Please, Robert.
This is Robert Jean. He's a Belgian guy, I think. Oh, no, a Dutch guy. Fratello Watches.
I don't want Fratello Watches.
Okay, different one then.
Actual people.
He's a person. He's a person. What about
What about that guy you want to get on?
Wico.
Wico.
Charles Sutanto. Yeah, he's a good guy. Yeah, follow him.
Yeah.
Charles Sutanto. It's all one word. Charles Sutanto. Sutanto at the end after Charles. Great guy. He's a big collector. I've met him. A few years ago, he's a friend. He's got some mutual friends. He's based in Jakarta, Indonesia, but he travels around Asia a fair bit, and he's in Europe every year. Really nice guy.
Yeah, and he's going to come on the podcast.
Hopefully, he's going to come on the podcast when he gets back to me.
So when people listen to this and they go and follow him, go and give him a follow, and then comment on one of his pictures.
Exactly. Say why you're following. Yes.
And say, I'm so sorry to hear you going on Fifth Radio. Maybe rethink that. Something like that. Just like knows what he's letting himself in for.
No, you get scared and you run off. He won't come on.
We want brave people.
He'll be right. I had a conversation with him just the other day. He's going to buy one of my watches, actually. So after this all blows over as far as this virus goes. But good guy. Awesome watches. Has some really, really interesting watches. You get a smattering of bits of modernist furniture and stuff that he does as well. But go and follow Charles. Okay. Who's yours?
If he's stupid enough to buy one of your watches, he's stupid enough to come on the podcast. Okay, so mine is someone called Den, who I've spoken to before in person, but I was speaking to him a bit on Instagram. It's another Melbourne person. Okay, I know. I'm sorry.
That's good.
We're just talking a bit about him modding watches, and he mods Vostoks, and he's modding a Sturmansky.
Okay.
But anyway, so we're just talking about it, and I was asking him like what he used to change hands, and he was saying tweezers, and I remember. Well, that's what I when I bought my loom to relearn hands, I just used tweezers. That was it.
Brilliant. Off and on.
And yeah, that was it. You take them off.
It's brilliant.
I can peel them off with some tweezers, and then you put them back on. You turn the tweezers around, give them like a little smack in the bottom to put them back onto the dial.
Okay.
But there's other. Then once I properly got into the industry, and then there were the old school guys. That's what they would do. They wouldn't bother getting the trumpet out to put like a second hand back on. They'd done a million of them. They would just put it delicately on with tweezers, turn the tweezers around, give it a little tap. The second hand was back on.
I've never seen anyone in Switzerland putting the tweezers on. Doesn't matter how old they are with a pair of tweezers. But it doesn't matter. That's a strange way of doing
proper
it.
Tools.
She'll be right, mate.
So when I was speaking to him and he was telling me that, I was like, God, I used to do that. But then I remember, so when I started and then I saw these old guys doing it with tweezers, and then so I was like, fuck it, I've been doing it the proper way before I even started working, when I've been doing my own stuff. So then I was just doing hands like that.
Okay.
Like when I started, like, oh, the second hand needs to go on. And then a watchmaker saw me do that. And then next thing I know, I'm getting dragged up. Like, why are you putting hands on with tweezers? And I'm like, listen, I know I'm a bit ahead of my actual skill level, and I've been progressing quickly. But I feel like I am capable of. I've been doing like hands on with tweezers for a while now before I started. Mm-hmm. But it's good that Pete. Yes, yeah, so I was speaking to him, and we're having a chat and stuff, and he was telling me about how he's modding stuff and. Certain bezels fit to Vostok watches and stuff, and it was just nice talking to someone who's actually got a couple little projects going.
It's
Den, D-E-N, okay. And it's his Instagram, before I get too distracted, which obviously it's too late, right? I think it's Kamenev Photography, K-A-M-E-N-E-V Photography.
Oh, okay, yeah,
Kamenev Photography. Kamenev.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Right. Okay. I was following already. Okay. Yep.
Yeah. He was at your thing.
Oh, was he?
Rob Fest. Rob Fest.
Maybe that's why I'm following him.
Yeah.
Freelance. Ah, okay. Nah. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yep. Gotcha. Yep. Got him. Okay.
So yeah, I just thought it really nice. And that's, I know I keep on saying the same thing, but I enjoy speaking to people a lot on the internet.
That's
great.
That's fine. The my problem is the people I've spoken to apart from a few guys here in Perth, is guys out there. I'm sorry, but I mean, I'm just multicultural, you know, I'm just international man about town. I mean, most of the guys I've spoken to over the years, they're just Swiss guys or whatever, or, you know,
you don't
Europeans.
Even give guys. You're just like, hi, everyone. My recommendation. Has anyone heard of my good friend Houdinki? It's like, you need to actually recommend people.
I've got their personal accounts. Do you want Anisha's personal account? Or I'm not going to. This is all the stuff you're supposed to have. You know, like, I mean, I'm sorry, I don't have any locals. That's all.
I've had lots of even, Petit Sekon, the guy that I was speaking to recently. I recommended him before. He's got a really good one. And he said he loves listening to Rob. That's what he said. Boy. He could listen to you for hours.
He doesn't understand my English.
I know. He's probably like, maybe it's like he puts on at night. It's more like a white noise or something.
Exactly.
It helps him helps him go to sleep. Maybe.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I've got lots of friends all over the world.
That you do. You do. That's fine. I'm just sorry I don't have more local guys. I wish I could have more local color, more local content. You know, a bit of a shout out for local guys, but
if you're in Perth,
if you're in Perth,
track down Rob.
Track me down. Yes, I'm track downable. Yeah, basically.
Okay, we're well over.
Okay, let's do it. Wrap it up. Come on, do your thing. Wrap it up.
What? My thing? So we're go done. And like, subscribe, all the stuff. Follow us on Facebook and Instagram. Go to Rob's great YouTube channel.
Yeah.
Geneva Blue, have you got any new videos out, Rob?
I was supposed to do one today. I ran out of time before we did this, basically. So I'll do one maybe tomorrow. But one's due. We're due for a new vid. Yes.
What's your new, you know, the subject for your new one?
It's going to be, no, just what's happening. We've got a few new watch, a few new, more, a couple more letters of the watch brand pronunciation list.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, that's all really. Everyone's talked about watches. I don't want to talk about the new AP I was going to mention, but I don't want to because I don't really. Yeah, no, I don't want to. No, that's all I was going to mention. Patek giving their dealers a go to sell watches online, which is kind of kind of rare, strange. But you know, desperate times call for desperate means, I suppose.
Indeed.
Yeah, no, okay, nothing
so tune,
else.
Really. Yeah, tune in to Rob's YouTube. Go and follow him on Instagram, Geneva_blue_. Follow us, Fifth Wrist, on Instagram, on Facebook, all the things, Pinterest. I think we're on Pinterest.
Do a review of your watch on Fifth Wrist. Do a review of your watch, not yours.
Oh, yeah, yeah, that's it. Yeah, I thought you were telling me. I was like, listen, it's my website. I know how it works, Rob. I've run out of watches. Yeah, do a review of your watch on... God, this whiskey's good. Do a review of your watch on fifthwrist.com. And what else have we got? Oh, yeah, go and watch that video on my Instagram. I never post anything on Instagram.
What's going on? Maybe you should post a bit more. You've got, you know... Can you not post pictures of work stuff?
No.
Okay.
Well, I can, but then I'll have to post pictures of work stuff from another work after that.
Fair enough. Yeah, okay. That's fair enough.
Go and check out that video. It's very good. And go and buy some straps and watches from Rob. That'd be great.
Even just straps is fine. Just straps in this just day and straps. Age, you know. We can't afford new
spring
watches.
Bars. He has so I've many spring bars.
Spring bars coming up my collective bar offices. Yeah. Cool. Okay. All good. What's our logo at the end? Our little thing.
It's not a logo.
What not a logo? What do you call it?
You want to do it this time? You can do it this time.
I don't know what it is. Oh, I found myself on
this time. You know what it is.
I saw one of this whiskey bottle. It said, all in good time.
Oh, that's good.
Not bad, is it? All in good time.
Because that sums us up actually very well. Yeah, that's like, what I thought. We're shit just now, but all in good time.
We will be good. We're going to be huge.
Okay, go for it, Rob.
Okay, all in good time. Thanks for coming.
Bye, guys.
See you next time. Bye.